I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast.
Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I am your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, not an unconventional guest, but a guest that I've been wanting to have on for a while that may seem a little bit out of the ordinary. His name is Aaron Mankey, and I really enjoyed having him on the show this week because I've been wanting to have him on the show for a while. He is the creator of Lore, a tremendously well-crafted podcast. He's also the co-host of Homework and the author of several novels, and he has got a lot going on, and I wanted to talk about the idea of the overnight success with him because he is the definition of an overnight success in that it took him many, many years to get to where he's at now, and Lore kind of is the thing that thrust him into the spotlight in more ways than one. We'll talk about processes, frameworks, you know, how he puts together an episode of Lore, why he is gone with the bi-weekly format or fortnightly format when it comes to the show, and many, many other idiosyncrasies and frameworks and processes that he has that he's incorporated into his life and how he made it from where he was only a few short years ago to where he is now. Let's not waste any more time. Let's dive right into it. My conversation with Aaron Mankey here on the Productivityist Podcast. I'd like to welcome Aaron Mankey to the Productivityist Podcast. Aaron, thanks for joining me this week.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate being here.
So it's, you know, we've known each other for a few years now. Back in, when did we first met? I want to say like 4 or 5 years ago. It's got to be up there.
Yeah, definitely.
It's got to be up there. And the space you've gone, and we're going to get to that, of course, is what you're doing now versus where you were when we first kind of came across each other online, is very different, let's say. I think that's an understatement.
Yes,
but
it is.
But to be fair, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is my journey kind of has been different as well, where I started off doing like comedy and now all of a sudden I became the very thing I was parodying on my site. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing I think that happens when you start to go out on your own. And now how long have you been working just as a, let's say, we'll just use the term freelance for now. How long have you been working as a freelance operator?
I would say, somewhere around the 8 year mark. Because it was the impending birth of our first child that kind of pushed me to, you know, find a way to work from home in a way that my wife can be at home with the kid. And so she's a little over 7. So throwing maternity time and I was ramping up before she gave birth. So somewhere in the 8, 8 and a half year mark, you know, I just tell people, you know, roughly a decade of working from home.
And you basically become an overnight success, right? In as much as what we've heard, what an overnight success, it takes like a decade to build an overnight success.
Yeah. So, you know, one very decade long night. Yeah.
Now let's before we dive into the big thing that you're doing now, which has garnered you a lot of acclaim and rightfully so, I want to talk about the other ventures that Wet Frog Studios is your company, right? That's
the business.
And now. That was what you started when you went out on your own, when you left the 9-to-5 day job kind of thing. And I'm putting air quotes around that because obviously it's still a job. Let's look at it now versus then. And for those who are didn't read the show notes, you're going to know right off the bat why we're going in this direction. So it's just stay with me here. But versus when you started with Wet Frog, which would have been probably, 100% of your income, I would say?
Yeah, absolutely.
What is it now? Because we were going to talk about letting go of certain things. Like, what is it now, would you say, approximately?
I'd say 99% of the income is Lore, you know. So Wet Frog is 1%, and some months it's 0, because I really only have one paid client right now, and that's because they don't trust anybody else. They're enormous projects that happen 2 or 3 times a year. And I've just, at least at this point, I've told myself when the time comes for the project, I'll make room for it. I don't know that I'll be able to do that in the future as much, but there's some other things working toward cutting that business relationship. Like, they're a Canadian company and the Canadian dollar versus American dollars pretty horrible right now.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. So it's actually pretty inexpensive for them to find somebody local, and they've been doing that for more and more small stuff. It's just the big projects that they really want them to be done well. This is a government, like a lobbyist group, that, you know, so they really want to make sure that things are done well. And, you know, so I'm working with them to find ways to keep that relationship open. They don't want me to sub it out. So I just have to work smart so that I can fit them in when they need me.
Now, interestingly enough, we were getting ready to record this, and my travel schedule has wreaked havoc on my body, as I probably expected. And I'm actually fighting a migraine as we're doing this. So you can probably even hear it a little bit in my voice. And when I said, Aaron, I don't know if I can do this, I said, can you reschedule? And your answer was, and I love this because I'm big on boundaries, is you said, my spring is pretty jam-packed. I don't know when I'm going to have some time. And I said, well, look further away. And you said, no, seriously, I don't know if I can look that far down the road. So when it comes to making, like, now with what's been going on with Lore, and I want you to talk about Lore in a second, like, have you set a hard and fast deadline to say, okay, Lore is the thing, like, the only thing? Like, have you said, this is when?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What is that date? Can you share it, or do you have, like, kind of an idea?
Well, I mean, outside of the design client that I just talked about, Lore has been the thing. It's been the prime, whatever you might want to call it, the prime thing since like middle of August, early September.
And we're recording this in early March. So it's been about, that'd be about 7 months now.
Yeah. And for looking at the inside, breaking the third wall or whatever, like, you know, interviewers tend to send over questions. Mike sent me questions, and I know that we'll get to a little bit more about that in a bit. But essentially, yeah. So I was full-time as far as like income from Lore covering all the financial needs of my family by like late August, let's say.
That's fantastic. And so the reason that one of the reasons I want to have you on the show is to talk not only about Lore, but there are other people out there that are listening that are figuring that they're starting out. Actually, I was talking to a gentleman yesterday who had just started doing productivity type stuff, basically about 4 or 5 months ago, and he was kind of a great guy, and I'm probably gonna do some stuff with him, but he was quizzing me about, like, you know, so how do you get to this, and I just said time.
Yeah,
like, you can't when you started when you left the world of work and went into the home and started working from home, aka homework, see what I did there? You didn't say, and then in 2015, I'm going to create this podcast called Lore that is going to be a sensation. But my path to that starts here with this design business. And of course, I'm going to open this free frictionless, get frictionless project. And I'm going to do a podcast with Dave Kahlo and all that. That's my plan. And then Lore will be at 2015. That's when I'm ready to. That's not how that played out, is it?
Not at all. I mean, there's, and I don't know if this is a cynical side of me or if this is just a looking back kind of the wise side of me, but I think that everybody who's pursuing a side project who maybe they're not completely satisfied with the thing that they're doing during their day job and they want to do something different, and so they start to explore that. I think all of those people at some point bump into the topic of productivity because they realize, okay, I'm going to try doing two things at once right now. So I need to work really smart about how I do these two things. And so what you'll see is people will frequently get into this phase in their life where they're stepping into the water, you know, that productivity and the skills that they need to learn is this new thing. And they almost become obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. But then you're in the water for a while. Now I live in New England, so the ocean is warm about one day a year, and the rest of the time it's about 20 degrees. So, you know, you get in the water and it's freezing cold, and after a while you start to warm up, you start to get used to it, you can start swimming around, and then productivity habits become rote and instinctive. And so, you know, when I first started doing my design business, I had to find a way to keep up with just all the client work, you know? Mm-hmm. So I took on, you know, I think the first to-do app was Things. That was back before they had Sync, and then they had the months long, we're going to try to get Sync right thing. And that's when I left them for OmniFocus, who said, we've already got Sync right. And I started journaling like my daily to-do list in a notebook, and I was learning these habits, and it's stuff that I still do today. I still use a to-do app. I still keep track of all of these things on paper, and I don't think about it anymore, but it was back then. It was when I first went out, you know, on my own that I had to say, well, Aaron, what can you learn to make this better? And I think too, I like to look at my life now and say, I'm holding a toolbox, and all the tools that are in it that I'm using in my job now with Lore, I've picked up along the way at different stops. And you're going to ask me about all these stops on the show today, but you know, like I picked up how to use a mic from homework, you know, I picked up, you know, how to use a to-do app and stay organized from running a design business. So it all kind of feeds into the future.
Well, it's interesting. I was, Eric Fisher and I were talking about this the other day, and he mentioned part of Merlin's, an episode of Back to Work where Merlin talked about GTD and how he doesn't really do pure GTD anymore. I think what happens is, and he makes a really good point, and I think that you could probably speak to this as well, is that when you're starting this stuff out, as you just said, when you're just trying to get your head wrapped around all the things that you want to and need to do, whether it's, you know, just at the 9-to-5 job that you have, plus balance your family life, because you've got kids and family too, right?
Yeah.
You go in to learn, you know, it's kind of like when you're in school, you learn how to read and write. So specific things, so that eventually when you aren't in school anymore, you know how to read and write pretty much anything that you want to read and write. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think that the same thing happens with a tool like GTD, like a methodology like GTD or Covey or whatever, or even like, again, like you said, like tools. You learn those things in the formative process of, okay, I'm going through this process right now, and it's the progress, the progress, all that stuff that kind of says, okay, now that I've done this for a while, what parts don't work? What parts do work? Where does this apply? How do I fit this in? Oh, I don't need to use this aspect of this. Like, you become more of you become a craftsman.
Mm-hmm.
Become a craftsperson. And I think that, like you said, you know, you learned how to use a microphone from you know, doing homework. I learned how to use a Mac during my journey from working at Costco to what I'm doing now by working for a year at an Apple independent reseller. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know how to, I mean, that's one of the reasons, in fact, it's primary reason that I took the job was, hey, I'll learn how to use a computer, the computer that I really want to wrap my head around while I am working. Like, how great is that? I remember when I was a music DJ, like a radio DJ and at the college radio station in the city where I grew up. I mean, I learned how to, you know, figure out where ads should go, flow of music, all that stuff, how to, you know, use my voice in certain ways, how to eliminate some of these ahs and the pauses and stuff, because that's what you learn as you go. And nothing was better than getting paid to do that at the same time. So, but do you think people often, they try to put the cart before the horse? Do you know what I mean? They try to say, okay, you know what, this is what I want to do and this is how I'm going to do it. And instead of just focusing on the art and maybe the science or the craft of just, you know, making things happen along the way, and then kind of saying, okay, well, this didn't work. Let me change course here and try this instead. Because you did that a number of times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every house has a foundation. It has a frame. It has exits, a roof. It has windows. And outside of that foundational, you know, core, everything else is kind of independently created. And I think that when you're starting out in something like GTD, you know, David Allen's Getting Things Done is kind of the Bible for anybody starting out to learn how to be productive with their life. You need to take on the foundational aspects first. You know, you need to lay a foundation and build the frame and put a roof over it. And then you can start to tweak it yourself. You know, if you grew up I was born in the mid 70s, but you know, by the time I was in like early college, I remember the Bruce Lee movie coming out.
Dragon.
The Dragon with remember who
Jason played. Jason Scott Lee.
That's right. Yeah. But like, people think of Bruce Lee and they think martial arts, and a lot of times they just kind of say, oh, he did kung fu, but no, he did this thing that he learned growing up, Wing Chun, but you know, it was like a derivative of kung fu essentially. But through his life, he took that foundation and tweaked it into his own martial art, which is now taught today in schools all across the world, Jeet Kune Do. You know, so he had to learn the foundation first, and then he adapted it to fit his own, you know, physicality and style and personality. You have to learn how to process your inbox like at the basic level before you can tweak how you're going to do it. You can take on inbox zero as a, you know, a core tenant in your life and say, I'm going to have three inboxes and this is what I'm going to do with them. But eventually your work habits are going to say, you know, it might be good if you had four inboxes. And that breaks the rules, but it fits you. Mm-hmm. Learn the rules first and then you tweak them. So I spent my early years doing, you know, freelance work, like just learning all the rules that I could, I like rules. I like guidelines. And so that fit my personality a lot. And then over the years, I kind of adapted and tweaked it as I went along.
Now let's talk about the journey. Let's get back to that a little bit. So, you know, I mean, you're into productivity. That's one of the reasons we gravitated towards each other. You know, the fact that we both are into that kind of space. And all of a sudden, you know, as you're developing Wet Frog and you're working there, then all of a sudden Get Frictionless comes along, you know, the frictionless freelancing, all that stuff. What itch were you scratching with that venture? I mean, I think I've got a sense of it based on the fact what you just said, but that was something that I don't think it came out of the blue, but it was kind of an offshoot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think that side projects should make sense for an outsider. They should look at it and say, oh, of course he did that. You know, of course she started that thing that she's doing now, because it should kind of fall out of whatever you're doing. You know, you're learning the skill in one place and now you want to take that skill and put it somewhere else. So, you know, for me, a lot of what I was doing over at Frictionless was about sharing the lessons that I was learning with other people. You know, running a design business from home for, you know, the years that I had taught me a lot of things, you know, a lot of tips and tricks and things that I wanted to share with people. I'm kind of the personality that I like to develop systems. I like to develop a way that I would declare is the better way to do it, you know, whether I'm right or wrong. And so Frictionless was an outlet for that. And it allowed me to kind of develop some philosophy around how I run my business and then teach it to other people. And I developed some tools that I was using in my own professional life. I had these printed note cards and paper. I mean, I was a print designer long before the era of icons and things like that for mobile phones. So, you know, I felt comfortable in the print world. So I was making notepads and index cards, and I was using them to map out my day and, you know, things like scheduling my day the night before. It was just a drum that I beat over and over again. So for that season of my career, that was all super helpful. But, you know.
And then you started to do homework, right?
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
So that was the entrance into the pot. And what I definitely want to get into the whole idea of like what lore does now versus what, you know, what homework was kind of the gateway for you. But, then all of a sudden you went into homework and you're still doing homework right now, right? On the 5x5 network.
Yeah, absolutely. Me and Dave Kalo. I mean, we've both gone through a lot of transformation over the years. It's been 4 years. I think 4 years in 4 years this month, potentially, or maybe it's next month. You know, but he started out working at, you know, the unofficial Apple weblog.
Yep.
There was some time where he was just like freelance writing and, you know, because AOL closed that down, and now he's working a job that he drives in and, you know, works like most people do in an office. And you know, we've gone through all these changes. And it's neat, you know, because you find out what kind of skills translate across all those different work lifestyles and what kind of fall apart when you change the system. So, yeah.
So let's talk about letting go of certain things, because I think that's been something that you've had to do with the success of Lore.
Yeah.
And again, people are like, what is Lore? What is Lore? Okay, you know what? Why don't we just get to that? Tell everyone what Lore is that doesn't already know what Lore is.
So for the three listeners that you have who are like, what is Lore? So Lore is a podcast. It is a narrative storytelling podcast where I tell the story or stories that help illustrate the history and the background behind common folklore, superstitions, horror tropes, things like that. It isn't conversational. It's not two white dudes talking. It's me with a prepared script that I deliver.
It's really prepared. That's how prepared yeah. It is.
I mean, essentially what you have to imagine is spend a ton of time writing a history paper that's about, you know, 10 pages long. Write it in a way that is friendly to the mouth so that when you speak it, it doesn't sound like you're reading from a doctoral dissertation. It sounds like you're talking naturally. And then practice it enough, deliver that on mic, lay down some background music, you know, produce the thing and put it out. So it's essentially like, I like to tell people it's a campfire story time. You know, it's me telling you dark historical stories, things that happened in the past that, that are sometimes more frightening than fiction really is. So that's what Lore is. And I didn't realize how popular it would be. So it's currently at any given time in the top like 40 on iTunes out of, I don't know, 500,000 podcasts that are out there. It's usually in the top 10 of the society and culture category. I have a sponsorship schedule that's completely booked all the way through the end of 2016. It's my full-time job and it's my dream job. I'm a writer. I mean, that's essentially what I am. I'm a professional writer now and I get paid for it. I love doing it. Yeah.
So as you listen to this, everybody who's listening, you heard the way that your voice changed as you kind of trailed off there. And it wasn't like it was almost like you finished the race. And I know you haven't finished the race, obviously, right. But it felt like, you know, like, okay, I've come, this is what I was looking for. This is the place that I wanted to be at. And so this first side project that you have, which is, you know, Frictionless, what happened to it?
So, you know, Lore was a side project at the beginning. And there was a point in my design life where I had the Read and Trust network that I was mm-hmm. trying to build yep. and run at the same time I was kicking off Frictionless, and I had the paper tools, I had the homework podcast, and then I started Lore Up. But I realized, holy cow, you know, I've got, not only do I have, you know, like my weekly game night at the game shop downtown, I have family time, mm-hmm. I have
client work.
Client work as the main thing at the time was that was what was paying the bills. I was making, you know, I don't know, $50 a month on selling paper tools. Like, it's not a lucrative business unless you have a marketing budget. And I didn't. So I had a lot of stuff on my plate. And eventually you just have to start picking what you're going to drop.
How did you do that? Like, because I come across this problem. I mean, it's interesting. I was thinking about this the other day, and I didn't mean to cut you off there. But,
no, it's okay.
You know, I mean, I came back from this travel, and while I was away, it's amazing what happens when you travel, because you're so removed from everything that's, you know, static, you know, mm-hmm. everything is so dynamic. Even when you theme your days and all that stuff, which I do. And even when you have your calendar and your task list and all that, you are still moving. So, you're not in your normal environment. So it gives you some time to really think and even not think if you don't want to. And I was looking at everything. And the thing that with productivity is we've been building and building and building this bigger thing. And just like I used to have those instances where when things were getting crazy, I'd drive by a Costco and go, you know, it might be nice just to be at the door greeting people again. Although that was one small part of my brain says that, and the other part goes, are you crazy? The same thing has happened with productivity. Sometimes I'm like, you know, it was just so much easier and simpler when I was just doing blog posts and right. hosting a podcast and doing, but again, the other part of my brain says, yeah, but there's no growth there. There's no, so how did you sit back? And so what I had to do is I've sat back and we've been culling stuff. You know, I'm not going to write about apps anymore. We're going to do better with Asana isn't going to happen. All these things that we're not going to do, and we're going to focus intently on one or two specific things and then maybe scale from there. How did you say, like, did you like just put things on a post-it note, like a bunch of post-it notes and just sit back and look at them and go, okay, what needs to give? Or did you, like, how did you assess this? Because you had so many things going on that you probably, there's conflict going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a tug of war, you know,
yep.
a pull and a push going on between, you know, you have three limited resources in your life. You have a limited amount of time, money, and energy. And if you look at it as, you know, you have one cup of water and you've got to spread that out between, you know, three Dixie cups, there's only so much you can do. And if you want to fill one of them up more than the other, you've got to take something out of one cup and put it into that cup. You know, you it's a limited resource. And so I like to think back to what's the Die Hard movie with Samuel Jackson?
Die Hard.
Is it three?
Yeah. Is it Die Hard with a Vengeance? I think, isn't it?
I think so. When they're going through New York City.
Yeah.
They're on this riddle quest, basically. Yep. And there's the one in the park by the fountain where they have the two jugs and they've got to pour the water between them to figure out how to get a certain weight. And like, it's a limited amount of water, but you have to do the math and you have to figure things out. That's where I was with my career. I was basically holding on to all of these things that, you know, in the beginning you have hopes like this thing is going to be huge. Like Frictionless is going to be the next, you know, Behance and it's going to be great. And well, no, it's not. Like it didn't end there. And so I looked at the fact that even though I was only making maybe $50 profit and selling paper goods, I had to go down to the basement and fulfill orders. I had to print labels for these things. I had to do this stuff. I had to have the physical product on hand. And then I had to order big batches of it when it ran out and hope that it would sell again. Like there was just so much of a mental cost and an energy cost to it. And, some time as well. So, you know, I just decided that this is something that nobody knows me for, or very few people know me for, I'm not going to make a lot of people sad. I've had, I think, two people write me and say, "Hey, what happened to the shop? You know, I'd love to buy more cards." And I've said, "I don't do that anymore. I'm sorry." You know, I point them toward, Brad Dowdy, from Notco, N-O-C-K. He's got some great index cards and pads of paper and paper books that people should pick up because
and oddly enough, that's what he's known for. He's known for the Pen Addict. Like, that's his thing.
That's right. It fits right into his wheelhouse. And because of that, he'll sell them better. He'll do better with them. And people should go support him for that. So this just was, it wasn't the thing that I needed it to be. Read and Trust, I cut loose years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, but it was my first attempt to see, would people pay for content? You know, would people...
And you've done that a couple times. You've done that with newsletters on a couple of occasions, I believe, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was an email newsletter for a while, and then I transitioned it over to like a PDF magazine thing that people would download. But the result was that not a lot of people pay for content, and that made it hard to pay the writers. So, you know, so I have total respect for people who run a publication, you know, where they're paying a writing staff and whatnot. I don't think that you should go the Huffington Post route and not pay your writers, but it's hard to pay people because people don't like to pay for a publication when they can go get a similar article online for free. So,
right.
So yeah, that was, I just had to make a lot of those decisions, you know, I was doing client work, but I had this itch, all at the same time, like on top of all those things, I've always had this itch to scratch of, fiction. Mm-hmm. I had wanted to be a writer since I was in fifth grade. And I had been dabbling with some writing, maybe about 3 years ago, I just got really serious and I started to write, I felt obligated because of how I started reading as a kid. I started in the fantasy world. So I, for some reason, felt obligated in the fantasy genre. When I ditched that and I said, you know what I really love is I love books by Stephen King. I like the supernatural thriller stuff. I grew up on, you know, X-Files and Unsolved Mysteries. I'm going to write in that world. And when I shifted that over, writing became a complete joy for me. And so I wrote three novels before I even put Lore out. The third one was released after Lore. I kind of hit the scene, but it was done before Lore was born. So I was writing too. And, you know, when I created Lore, I just assumed that it would be this like irregular thing, just like anything else. And I'd give a couple hours to it each week. And then that changed pretty quickly. I mean, like I said, within a few months, I was full-time supported by Lore.
Let's start to shift and talk a little bit about, you know, how you put together an episode of Lore and what's been going. Like, you started the Lore started when? When did you start Lore?
2 weeks from a year ago, 2 weeks from today. Does that make, am I saying that right? In 2 weeks, it will be the 1 year anniversary. So
it's less than
March 18th.
Yeah. So it's less than a year old. So as this episode airs, it's still not even a year old. And you have, I mean, the accolades that Lore has received is just insane. I mean, you were one of iTunes' best of 2015. You've been featured in The Guardian, Huffington Post, USA Today, Nerdist.com, which, of course, for nerds, I was like, wow. You know, you have been really, like, it's just blown up. And the thing is, it's less than a year old. So you're still, like, it's still formative, right?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the year has simply flown by, you know, and part of it is because when you do that thing that you really love and it keeps you really busy, time does fly by because when I finish writing an episode, I move on to the next episode and I write it, you know, like I'm in this constant race of, all right, let's write the next one. And then I have to take breaks to record and, you know, I have Patreon rewards that I need to prepare, you know, things like magazine transcripts and whatnot. And like, it all keeps me busy.
Yep. And now let's talk about the process of putting an episode together. So how long does it take you to write an episode generally?
40 hours.
Wow. So that's a whole week.
It's basically a whole week. Yeah. So Lore, I release on a 2 week cycle. If you're in the UK, that would be fortnightly. If you're in the US,
so it's bi-weekly then.
Yeah, exactly. So every other Monday, Monday the 7th is going to be a release day. And then 2 weeks after that and 2 weeks after that. So anytime I can get ahead on the writing schedule, I'm buying myself a couple of weeks, which is really great. You know,
What do you think about the biweekly? Because I mean, it's funny. We're going to make some changes to the Productivityist podcast, which I'll talk to you a little bit after we're done recording, because I've not shared it with a lot of people yet. But everyone is, you know, you can't have seasons. You have to go every week. You can't to me that seems rather, you know, short-sighted. Especially if you're putting together something as high quality as Lore is. Like, I mean, you can't just, and it's just you. That's the other thing too, right?
Yeah. I mean, somebody would say, well, then you hire a research assistant. But that's not simple, because I don't know what is episode worthy until I've researched it. And if I'm trusting somebody else to research it, then I'm giving up my opportunity to let my intuition say, no, that's not a good story. I spent 3 days this week writing what I thought would be episode 32 and realized, laying in bed Wednesday night, this is complete and utter crap. I'm forcing it to, I'm trying to make it into a lore episode when it's not lore material. I mean, it didn't even fit into the folklore category. It was just, it wasn't right. And so Thursday morning I sat down, I moved it to an archive where I might, you know, mine it for something later, and started a brand new episode, a brand new episode 32. And it's actually turning out to be one of my favorite of this year so far. But sometimes you just, like, you don't know what's going to happen. You have to, like, I can't trust another person to do that for me. I thought, well, maybe I could trust them to sell my ads, but then I'm giving up a percentage of my ad sales, and anything I can earn helps support the family and keeps the lore independent and, you know, all that.
It allows you to stay, again, remove certain elements from your life that are taking you away from lore. So, yeah. So, I mean, again, the temptation to go weekly hasn't even crossed your mind.
It has. And in October, you know, October is the month of Halloween. A lot of people say that I have a scary podcast. That's not really what I'm aiming for. But the material tends to be a little dramatic and dark. And so for Halloween, for the month of October, I decided to do weekly episodes as a gift. Based on the every other week schedule, it actually turned out to be 5 episodes in a row. And it just
because you're doing it Mondays, right?
Yeah, Mondays.
So, you will have 5 episodes.
Yeah.
One will come out on Halloween, actually.
This coming year, yes. But yes. This past year when I tried it, it was like 4 weeks in October. And then the very first week of November when I thought I'd have a break. No, that was actually back on the biweekly schedule. So right. I did 5 weeks in a row and it killed me. I mean, it was just, I got sick in November because, you know, when you work really hard and then mm-hmm. you crash and it all falls apart. So what I've learned is you have better stats. You grow faster when you do weekly. You probably float higher up on the charts when you're doing weekly stuff because, you know, it's the long tail graph.
It's quantitative data.
Yeah,
it's,
it
it's,
is.
It's so, easy. It's easy. Whereas qualitative data is much, much more difficult to measure. Right.
So I have a slower growth pattern on a biweekly scale where, you know, launch day is enormous and then it tapers off like you'd expect. And then 2 weeks later, it picks up again. Every episode has been bigger than the last, except for this little blip in October when I did the weeklies and it killed my stats and did something weird. And so, but for the most part, lore grows every episode. It's insane. It is just absolutely insane. I never expected this. The first day that I put out lore back a year ago, I had like 70 listens.
Wow.
Know? So,
and how many do you have now?
It depends on where I am in my 2 week cycle, but there's a lot of, I mean,
when you release an episode as of next week,
yeah.
So as we're recording this, because we release on the same day. So,
oh, okay. Sorry. So,
No. Totally different genres, whatever.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
what would your number, what is a typical number for you?
On a release day, 150,000.
Yeah. Don't say that like as if it hurts.
I don't like to talk numbers.
No, but the thing is,
I feel like it's one of those like.
Right. Well, but the way you said it, I mean, that's, and the reason, again, I want to go back to how you talked about lore when you were finally saying like, this is what I get to do. I'm a writer. Like, it's not about the numbers. I know that it's not about the numbers with you. What I wanted to illustrate there is that people who are in this position where they're like, look, I'm trying to make this other stuff work. And there's this really big thing that I want to work on. And I'm no different. We all have those things. And well, here's what can happen when you say you're not throwing caution to the wind because yeah. you've mapped. I mean, you've got, again, like you said, you've got a foundation in place. You've got a framework in place where you could say, look, I'm going to give this a go. And if it works, great. You did that with Frictionless. You did that with, you know, you've done that with, you did that with Read and Trust. You know, you did it when you left the work world and went to go work at home. Many of us have. When you hit that lightning in a bottle, which this very well could be, or you hit that big thing, I think the trajectory that you've had, that's what I wanted to illustrate for everyone here, is it's not, you know, there is no such thing as an overnight success. And the thing that you think will hit may not be the thing that does. I mean, I thought for sure when I started, if I am the Stephen Colbert-esque productivity guy, where I preach procrastination and getting things done eventually, and by doing so, teach people how to be more productive, I'm going to be, you know, fantastic. Like, that'll be my little niche. The problem is it's a niche within a niche, number one. And in order to do satire and parody really well, you have to do it 100%. Mm-hmm. You can't, it's the same reason when I was doing comedy where people said, oh, you should do stand-up. Like, I was doing stand-up, sketch, and improv. Again, those glasses, right? Like, which one was I doing better than any other one? Not any. I was doing everything okay. Do you know what I mean? And so eventually what happens is you have to decide, you know, you have to pick your bucket.
Yeah, absolutely. You do. And you know, you build your systems. You know, I'm pretty religious with how my week flows. So I know that I can get the writing done in a week.
Do you theme your days? Like, you know, I know a lot of podcasters and a lot of people, like, are you at the point now, because you've been able to fine tune your week to like, okay, this is my primary thing. Do you say, okay, well, Monday, this is generally what I work on. Tuesday, this is, and then you have OmniFocus kind of guide the specific details of those days.
Yeah. Yeah. These days I'm on Todoist. I've been there for about a year and I love it.
Right. Me too.
So I had tried originally to set up a 2-week rhythm.
Right.
I found that my mind likes the weekly rhythm. Every Monday I do this. Every Tuesday I do this.
Right.
Because there are weekly things in my schedule. And so it's weird to say like, okay, on this Tuesday, I record after I get back from lunch with my wife. But the next Tuesday, I write when I get back. Like, I needed a bit more...
Consistency. You want to wake up every Tuesday and go, oh, today's recording day.
Yeah, which is how I've gotten ahead on writing the episodes, because now I'm writing the same amount every week instead of every other week, and it's helpful. So 30 to 40 hours to do an episode. And then the other half of my time in that 2-week cycle is like, business admin. I've got media obligations. Like, I don't know how many interviews I've done in the last, I'm looking at my notes here because I'm in the folder. I have 31 interviews that I've done in the last year.
Jeez.
You know, it's just like, I have email from listeners, you know, if you want to call it fan mail or whatever, I get a dozen a day. And I write back to everybody. I've got, you know, future stuff that I'm planning and changes to the website and all that stuff, you know? And I like doing all of it. You know, I've turned down, I think 4 different network offers, you know, from big podcast networks that want me on, because I like controlling it all myself. And maybe that's a flaw, but right now it means that, you know, any penny that I do earn is mine. It supports the show. It means that I can continue on in the future. I don't have to worry about, you know,
and you have the freedom to choose what you want. I mean,
I'm the boss.
Yeah, you're not beholden to anybody. It's the same reason why when people say, oh, well, I was going to write a book on Todoist, and I thought, you know, I don't want to be the guy who chases apps and stuff like that. That's one of the reasons. But there's also, like, people have said, oh, well, you become the Todoist guy or the Asana guy or whatever. Then all of a sudden it compromises you a little bit, you know? Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be, and just like if you became... You joined, let's say, you know, whatever. There's a multitude of podcasts. You all of a sudden fall into that category. And let's face, I mean, before we wrap up, like, what shows inspired you? I mean, I know there's a post that you have about why you started Lore and why you created it. But what shows kind of, like, as you were getting ready to craft this new venture, like, what inspired you? I mean, I know that there was I listened to Mike Hurley do the app, the history of the iPhone, the history of the apps, episodes that he did for, what's the name of the show? Oh my goodness. On Relay. I can't remember the name of the show right now and he's going to kill me. But anyway, and I thought this is fantastic because he took a tech show and basically crafted it in serial style. You know what I mean? What shows kind of inspired you to kind of say, hey, this is the way I want to do it? Because I know you don't want to do just another, and I knew you didn't want to do just another show.
Well, I mean, I you know, a year ago and even today, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. You know, I listen to, you know, a Talking Heads podcast. Mm-hmm. It's called Still Untitled. It's with Adam Savage from the Mythbusters. Yep. It's from tested.com. You know, it's their crew. So Norman Chan, Will Smith. Not that Will Smith, but Will Smith. I think actually his Twitter handle is like Not That Will Smith or something like that. And then Adam.
You listen to a lot of audiobooks though, don't you?
I do listen to a lot of audiobooks. Yeah. Although when I'm really in like a writing phase where I'm cranking out a lot of episodes, my reading, even if it's audio reading, drops off the face of the earth because I just can't maintain the mental space for them both.
Cal Newport and I were talking about this the other day where we said when we're writing, like, I love to read a lot of nonfiction, but once we start writing like book stuff, we have to only read like fiction because if we read nonfiction, then our work is going to be kind of, things are going to fuse with our work and it's going to be too, so I totally get that. And I don't listen to a lot of podcasts that much anymore either. I've been doing a lot more reading than, and it's just because there's just so much.
There's so much great stuff and it's getting better every day.
Yeah.
The stuff that's constantly in my podcast feed would be The Illusionist, that starts with an A, not an I, from Helen Zaltzman in the UK. She's a fantastic storyteller and she talks about the history behind words, which is, for me, that's like candy. 99% Invisible with Roman Mars.
Yep.
He's amazing. Criminal, which is, if you go to, I think, thisiscriminal.com. All three of those shows are on the Radiotopia network.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, amazing storytelling. I discovered all of them, except for Criminal, I discovered all of them after I started Lore. There's another show on their network called The Memory Palace, which in a lot of ways is very similar to Lore.
Mm-hmm.
And people have drawn comparisons to them. I discovered it a couple of months after I started Lore when somebody said, wow, this sounds like The Memory Palace. And I was like, well, I don't know if that's a compliment or not. Let me go listen. and then I kind of, you know, digested his back catalog. He tells stories with a lot of heart and it's a lot to aspire to. And that's the thing, like one show will inspire another show for a lot of people. There's now a whole slew of, you know, shows that have been inspired by Lore, you know, basically one person in front of a mic reading a prepared script and then laying music underneath it. I don't know if we can say that I invented some sort of a genre. I'd say that Memory Palace maybe did, but I didn't know it. But you know, people look to the popular places to find a format or to find a style. I like to kind of dip into the variety because it helps me not get stale with what I'm doing. You know, like, I mean, 99% Invisible is essentially like a brilliantly done audio version of a really good Fast Company article,
you know,
where you've got the writer of the article's voice, but then you have the voice of quotes, you have the voice of other experts, sound effects or the images. Like it's an audio magazine and I love it. It's just so well done.
Well, and Roman was at Podcast Movement last year and he did a fantastic job and you're going to do a fantastic job this year.
I hope so. I'm actually talking about, earning an income from podcasting.
So there
really wasn't a category for, all right, I tell stories for a living, so maybe I can teach people how to tell stories.
Dan and Jared, it was funny when I saw you there. I'm like, of course you'll be there. Why wouldn't you be? Aaron, I want to respect your time. I want to respect my listeners' time. And I want to thank you for joining me this week on the show. Where can people find you and your incredible and amazing podcast online?
Well, you know, they could either go to aaronmankey.com, which is a horrendous thing to try to spell, or you can just go to lorepodcast.com. The contact page will have Twitter handles and all that kind of stuff. I'm on Twitter, AMAHNKE. The show is on Twitter, Lore Podcast. Those same handles on Instagram, that kind of stuff. So yeah, follow along, say hi, and thanks for having me on the show.
Aaron, thanks so much for joining me this week on the Productivityist Podcast.
Thanks, Mike.
There you have it. Another one in the books. Thanks to Aaron for joining me this week on the podcast. If you're interested in giving me feedback, I'd love to hear it. The blog post for this episode, you can leave some comments there. You can also leave a rating or review in iTunes. And if you want to become a Patreon supporter, you can do that as well. Just go to patreon.com/productivityist and help out the podcast in that way. That's it for this week. Thanks again for joining me. Thanks to podcast producer John Polstra for putting this episode together. And until next time, I am your host, founder of Productivityist, Mike Vardy, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.